The battle for equal rights in America has ridden on buses and trains and streetcars, and we can add one more vehicle to that list, airplanes. A new book from the University of Georgia Press focuses on segregation in airports. It's called Jim Crow Terminals, The Desegregation of American Airports. The book details the largely undocumented segregation at Southern airports in the 20th century. And with me to talk about this is Anke Ortlepp. She's a professor of North American and British history at the University of Kassel, Germany. Hi there.
Good morning.
You're at the University of Kassel, Germany. How did you land on the issue of segregation in American airports?
Well, I wrote a book about cultures of air travel, and then I originally wanted to dedicate one chapter to the story of segregated airports, and then that turned into its own book.
Because there was so much? Was there just too much material?
Because there was so much material that I couldn't squeeze into a chapter, and I thought the story was so interesting and that it just needed its own book because it's essentially, you know, a big national story that had to be told.
Okay, so give me an idea of one of the stories that really sort of captured you, that you discovered in your research and you said, you know, I have to make this a book.
Well, you know, I stumbled upon this panel in the exhibit on commercial aviation at the National Air and Space Museum that talked about the activities of one member of the House of Representatives, Charles Diggs from Michigan, and how he had contacted airlines and drawn their attention to problems at airports. And so I thought, you know, this is really interesting. I've never heard of this. I need to look into that. And then I started digging around, looking at the records of different civil rights organizations, and I found, you know, records that documented problems at airports across the South.
So, okay, was Hartsfield-Jackson in Atlanta one of those airports?
Yes, it's a big part of my story, you know, the story is essentially a post-war story that starts when more Black travelers discover air travel and an increasingly affluent Black middle class starts to travel.
But were the airports explicitly segregated? Were they like the drinking fountains where you had one labeled colored and one labeled white? Was it that explicit?
Yes, it was that explicit. And airports started converting their facilities in the 1940s and the 1950s, setting up separate facilities for Black and white travelers. And in the 1950s, the federal government began to make funds available for the construction of new airports, and essentially all major airports, major and minor, that were constructed in the 40s and 50s, and into the early 60s, were designed including segregated facilities, restrooms, waiting rooms, restaurants, drinking fountains. All the service facilities were segregated.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with author Anke Ortlepp. She's the author of a new book, Jim Crow Terminals, The Desegregation of American Airports. What happens when the passengers stepped on the plane? Were planes segregated also?
No, interestingly enough, they weren't, because commercial aviation was a federally regulated industry, and so federal laws applied that prohibited discrimination based on race. And so I did not find more than anecdotal evidence that people were treated differently in the cabin. There are a few exceptions. There is the case of Ella Fitzgerald, who was denied her seat in first class on a trip to Hawaii, but that's one of the few exceptions that I'm aware of.
So when it came to segregated terminals, was there a difference in quality between the spaces that were designated for African Americans and those that were designated for whites?
Yeah, there was mostly a difference in design quality. Often the facilities for African American passengers were on the margins of the terminals and they looked rather drab, whereas the service facilities for were reserved for white passengers usually were very centrally located and displayed all you know, modern design features and decorations. So that's the major difference. And some facilities, mostly cafeterias, were also, you know, they were often integrated spaces, but these were really the only kinds of integrated spaces that both white and black passengers could use.
So how did that end? Who or what caused the desegregation of our airports?
Civil rights activists fought on several fronts. They organized direct action activities at a number of different airports, staging eat-ins and sit-ins in front of restaurants. And members of Congress thought about regulatory and statutory reforms and implemented those. And the biggest chunk of activity focused on litigation, and individuals filed lawsuits against airports in Atlanta and other cities supported by the NAACP and its lawyers.
So was there an outcry equal to when we saw the fight over, say, the desegregation of lunch counters and schools? Was there an equal outcry over airports?
There was not an equal outcry, and the fight against segregation did not attract as much attention as the fight for integrated service facilities like lunch counters or the transportation. If we think of the Freedom Rides, you know, the effort to integrate interstate buses that caused a really violent reaction in many places in the South and received a lot of attention. And this kind of, you know, these kinds of confrontations did not happen in air travel. Protesters came to airports and voiced their concerns, but there was usually no violence. And it strikes me that the number of travelers taken in total were too small to really merit that much attention.
You mean the number of African American travelers or travelers
Yes.
overall? Oh, I see.
Yeah, the number of black travelers. You know, they represented sort of a continuous flow through the terminals. But if you look at images of travelers, you know, they're really well dressed and they just fit into sort of the cosmopolitan a group of people who used air travel. And so it seems that, you know, it wasn't really worth fighting that group, whereas people, you know, devoted all their attention to fight against the integration of schools and other means of transportation and other service facilities.
How was this influenced also by the business community? Because even at that time, much of air travel coming through Atlanta's airport, at least, was business travel. It was business people getting from one place to another. Did that have an effect on whether there were protests or not?
Not really. So you're absolutely right. Many of the black travelers were also business travelers, and they were representatives of the middle class. That, on the other hand, led them to file class action lawsuits as representatives of a particular class of American people. But the business community really did not react to that to a large extent. They recognized, you know, airlines recognized African Americans as a growing class of customers, but the local business community did not really get involved.
So what kind of insight have you gained, do you think, into the fight over civil rights and segregation by looking at the airport specifically?
What I thought was really fascinating, that I originally expected the introduction of this new and modern means of transportation to somehow impact Southern cultural and transportation landscapes in ways that were really different from other means of transportation, and it didn't. You know, the same kinds of rules, laws, ordinances that applied to other facilities were applied to airports, and they were just fitted into the Southern landscapes of segregation. And so I think, you know, we have to think about modernization as a part of racial discrimination, and that's something that necessarily ended ways of discriminating against people.
But then what does that mean about the remnants? Do you still see, when you walk through airports now, remnants of that earlier segregation, or has that all been sort of redeveloped and redesigned away?
Yeah, it's been redesigned away, particularly with regard to the airport in Atlanta. You know, the municipal airport, the war surplus found in the 1940s and 50s was the segregated facility. And then the new terminal that opened in 1961 was built after the courts had ended segregation in Atlanta. And, you know, since then, you've gotten another airport. So there are really, you know, no remnants that we still see.
So what do you think the remnants are? One of the arguments that you make is that this history has been forgotten but shouldn't. Why?
It shouldn't, because, you know, I think, you know, it's sort of, it merits attention because the issue was resolved much quicker than, you know, the issues in other fields of American public life. The last airport, the airport in Shreveport, Louisiana, was integrated in 1963 in a federal lawsuit that was filed against the airport. And so I think, you know, what's really interesting if you look at air travelers is sort of the different dynamic between race and class. You know, it's simply a different group of travelers who use air transportation. And it's sort of, you know, the reaction to their concerns and the way that, you know, they as a class get treated somewhat differently, that is interesting.
That is author Anke Ortlep. She's the author of the new book, Jim Crow Terminals, The Desegregation of American Airports. It'll be published by the UGA Press later this year. Anke, thank you so much.
You're welcome.